This is the one with bunting.
Domestic abuse.
And an Elmer's quiff.
It has a young sexy queen.
And the invention of Betamax.
It's called the Idiot's Lantern.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Soylent, Zandun, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when?
Reviewing all new Who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode N021 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponken. Yes, I am. And today I am joined not by one, but by two marvellous chaps. Let's start in order of celebrity in the Whoniverse. We have Nicolaili.
Hey there, podcast land.
And next to Nicolaili, new to the Who Back When team, we have the Druid.
That'll do for now.
Hello,
good
Drew
day,
Meister.
Everyone.
Welcome to Who Back When. Ladies and gentlemen, I feel like Drew needs a little bit of an intro here. We have been talking about getting him on board with Who Back When for freaking ages now.
Mm.
Originally decided you should be on Classic, I think, but then I was taking Aeons to record the solos. Welcome.
Thank you, both and all.
Nick, should we quiz him a little bit?
Let's quiz him. So, Drew, what is your earliest memory of Who?
Oh, good question.
Right, I'm straight out of the gate.
Well, having been born in the mid-80s and spending an errant childhood on CITV, my earliest memory of Who is actually the Eighth Doctor.
Whoa.
Which set me back by several years.
Oh.
Wow.
Not to give spoilers away.
Well, we saw that film quite recently.
Oh, yes. That was...
And it's not good.
It isn't. I can't wait to do that podcast.
I know, that's going
to
be great.
That'll be the last Classic Who, won't it?
Yeah, at that point, we may even have caught up with New Who.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, so since then, you've explored it much more.
I've explored the New Who more than the Classic.
Who's your favourite New Who Doctor?
I'd say probably Matt Smith.
Oh, controversial choice.
Yeah, and then favourite companion.
Oh, that's too hard.
Who would win in a fight, a Cyberman or a Zygon?
Well, considering the number of times the Cybermen have lost against the number of times the Zygons have lost, probably a Zygon.
Probably true. Okay, you have to have sex with one alien whilst watches. Which alien? Go. Probably cut that as well.
Yeah. Well, if he's going to be watching, I need the alien that will make me come the quickest. So, because that would just be too awkward to endure.
Oh, that's perfect.
It would be.
So, I don't know.
Is that a
sexy
Zygon?
Alien.
Maybe a Zygon. Yeah, they've got suckers, man.
Can they shapeshift into something comely?
Oh, not in this case.
I think a Santaran, because he'd just be super determined.
Or a Dalek with a plunger.
Yeah.
A Santaran would go right at it.
He really would.
I now have a semi. Let's jump into a bite-sized chunkoo. Dude, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Bite-sized chunkoo. The Doc and Rose materialise in not New York, more precisely, North London. And not in 1958, but 53, where a domestically abusive paterfamilias and all his neighbours are anticipating a shiny hat being put on a little lady.
In order to view the coronation in all its splendour, Mr. Magpie is practically giving away magnificent new tellies, and everyone's getting one.
And as though that weren't enough, each television set comes fully equipped with a face-sucking alien.
Yada yada yada, Doc and Rose must save the day.
B-Scout over.
Absolutely.
You are welcome.
Yeah, you are. So, as we heard in Bite Size Chunk of Who, we've materialised with the Doc and Rose all dressed up to be swinging around with Elvis.
Yeah.
I think is the intention. And they're out thinking it's going to be New York. It's going to be, you know, late 50s era Elvis. What were some 50s era Elvis songs?
Hound Dog?
There you go, Hound Dog. Absolutely, Hound Dog completely encapsulates the costume.
Shannon has the hair and everything,
yeah.
Rose has a dress, blah 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 blah. I hate this intro. I think this episode starts off really, really pants.
Oh no, it doesn't start off there.
God, what a... Well, we're up to a glorious start.
Absolutely,
right.
sorry. Let's
okay, rewind.
Yeah. So we start off in...
Into the TARDIS!
We start off in Mr. Magpie's shop.
That's right.
Mr. Magpie is labouring over his books, and he's £200 overdrawn, which is a fuckload in 1950.
Yeah, it's tons of money.
That's so much money.
You could stage a small coronation with that money.
Absolutely. 1953, could you not buy, like, a house for 200 quid or some shit? Like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Wales.
Sorry, our Welsh listeners.
Yes, absolutely. I fully apologise.
Magpie is pen deep in accountancy.
Yes, he is.
Scratching all the way down a single page.
He's not doing well.
No, no. He's had better days.
So I guess we're supposed to say that it's a man down on his luck. I don't know. I have no idea what
despite
it means.
Despite this, seems perfectly happy to be coerced by an alien to give away TVs for £5 each.
We'll get to it.
He has a lot of stock.
I guess so. I guess he's like, well, we might as well, won't we?
It makes him desperate to... actually, no, you're right.
Yeah, but he's completely coerced.
No, he's not doing this because he's being like financially coerced by some weird space alien bureaucrat. He's doing this because...
Let's introduce this.
Okay, yeah. All right, fine.
We're in the middle of a lightning storm. Then one of the aerials in Magpie's shop comes transmitted the wire. I guess we'll introduce the alien, and it takes the form of...
Yeah, Drew, you had an actual cultural reference for this.
Yes, it's the lady from Watch With Mother, which was an early BBC TV programme.
There were only three programmes.
Okay.
Yes. And much like the wire, she would say, "Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then I'll begin."
And then tell you.
Oh, that is an uncanny impression.
Yeah, and then they'll sort of tell you a story. And
is that what it was?
Yeah.
She would tell stories. So it was a kids' show.
It was a kids' like the first kids' program almost.
For orphans, presumably.
Oh God.
What? You're bringing mothers into
for
busy homes.
Busy parents that were in post-war Britain and had jobs and shit.
All right, Drew Weister, continue. Yeah.
Inexpensively sat in a studio and read from a book to the nation's adoring children whose mothers presumably couldn't read. And compensated for their lack of education.
Is this how the intro
it does.
Ends,
and then,
basically?
Right, where he says that she calls over Magpie and they start sucking face. That's pretty much how we're led into
sucks his face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Latches onto his face, presumably to implant some of her behind in his brain somehow.
Do you think so? I don't think so. I think she gives him like a near-death experience because later on he is scared shitless.
I know, because
that is actually going
to
be...
We'll do this. We'll come to this later on. But he does say, "Behind my eyes, it's burning." So she's
really?
Done something. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think
she
shows him the true potential of television.
Just like shows him a whole episode of Geordie Shore.
So intro happens. We are now in the actual episode. TARDIS materializes. Doors open. Rose, this is what we said before. She's wearing the dress. Tennant has his quiff. They're expecting it to be New York in 1958. Tis not. It is North London, 1953.
Slight tangent. I think that dress that Rose is wearing has become a bit of a thing, as a cosplay thing.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. If you Google image search Doctor Who cosplay, that's like one of the probably top 10 most frequent.
Yeah, I was Googling the Idiot's Lantern for just various shows and stuff.
Okay.
And yeah, that was like the third thing on it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Actually, there's a really fun joke in there. I want to just get into that, which is, you know, them driving around and he said, yeah, we're in New York. And then just basically all the iconoclastic things of 50s London.
Yeah, you have a double-decker bus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A whole lot. That's a nice...
Yeah.
Okay. So there...
He comes out on a Vespa.
On a Vespa.
Yeah.
Which is that a tremendously New Yorkian 50s?
I was going to say, it's in my notes. That's not an American drop
Absolutely. It's not really even a 50s thing per se.
Oh, it feels like something the Pink Ladies might ride.
There's only an extra point towards the introduction, which is when Eddie comes walking out of the house in a lightning storm, wearing essentially a lightning rod of medals. Jet, which you never see again.
That's a good point. We get introduced to the family.
Okay, yeah.
Take us through, Drew.
Okay. Who are they? Who's the paterfamilias?
Well, the paterfamilias is Eddie, who has a moustache, which is highly dubious, given the century he's in.
He's also like, he's a total wife beater.
Wow. Okay.
Okay,
I have a whole thing about this, and it'll probably come into more of fruition later, so I'll sort of shelve it for a second.
Okay, fine.
But
he's not a good husband.
Well,
suffice to say.
But he's like a straw man. Like, it's the most ridiculous fucking character trope. It's basically like, in the 50s, there was this whole sort of switch from, you know, in the sense of patriarchy, you know, which was awesome after the war, going to work and all that sort of stuff. And Mark Gatiss and the writing team have just, like, condensed this into the most fucking facile, glib character. Like, actually, it was way more complicated than that.
Okay, they've got one character who symbolizes the prior social values, and then the wife and all of the rest of the neighborhood, basically, who symbolize the development or the modernization of social values. He is really, like, verbally abusive towards both his wife and his son.
Now, that's what I think. This this caliber, this New Who, is why it's facile and glib. Is that all the character we're given? We're presented with that, we're supposed to gobble it up, right?
Sure.
And there's no depth there. Whereas everyone else usually, or further on in Who, as their writing gets more mature, everyone gets like a duality. Whereas this character has no duality, he's just a prick.
I think that's TV shows in general of this year.
Well, okay.
2007
TV shows. We'll get to more aspects of this.
Fine, okay. There's a wife who's kind of meek in the family. There's a son who's clearly going to be the little boy hero. And there's a grandmother in the house as well. Blah, 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 blah. Next up.
Yeah. For a start, in this scene, he's actually quite loving. It says that his son asks it, Dad, can we please get a telly? Everyone's getting one. And then he goes, well, maybe we'll get one for the coronation. Son tussles his hair. His mum gives him a bit of smile. And Lan turns around and says, oh, those TVs, they rot your brains, they do.
Oh, I wonder if that's foreshadowing.
Absolutely. So
she makes every sentence count, that granny.
She does. She does. She knows what's coming. This is her small amount of FaceTime.
Whoa!
Anyway, moving on. It's a really nice way they do the narrative sometimes. Super dramatic, and then, oh, isn't everything pleasant in the world of the
I feel like that's
Rose?
What they normally
do. Yeah, they do a lot of that.
In fact, that's always what they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're quirky, we can only really think of this particular century in this time. It's like, the fuck, you've got all of space and time. They're going through a whistle-stop tour of all the people that have essentially exploited black music. So they're starting off with Elvis. They're just gonna knock off all the rock and roll and rhythm and blues guys. 50s era Britain, post-war, it's just full of iconography and full of cool things that you can frame a scene around. That's awesome. Like the dress, like the sort of teeny bopper dress, like the big red telephone boxes, the brickwork, the coronation, just these beautiful, sumptuous, like, you know, design sense that you could...
Yeah, and they've put some sort of filter on it as well that ages everything, as in it ages the streets in a way. It's very nicely done.
Also bunting, because who the fuck doesn't love bunting?
Yeah, but people in 2015 love bunting.
Because it's a specific time, right?
Yeah, the bunting pioneers.
Yeah, yeah, bunting. Genuinely, bunting reminds me of what VE Day must have felt like.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because right? We're not looking forward to any future victories at this point.
No, that's certainly not.
Also, everything is rags, and you can't put them back together into clothes, so why not hang them from some string?
There are also flags all over the place. Small flags all over the place. Which is also almost indicative of it being a time when you could have tons of flags all over the place without being suspected of being a racist.
Yeah, absolutely. 50s Britain was like our roaring 20s. It's like, genuinely, it was like a point of like, oh, we've come out of this out of top.
Really?
Report. Yeah, it kind of
really?
Was.
Really? I don't feel like it was a time of excess.
It wasn't, but there was that of feeling, certainly. I think there was that feeling of which, like, the feeling of being British was at an all-time high.
Mm.
Cause,
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing.
There would have been no bunting under the Nazis.
Maybe some bunting. I have no idea. Bunting, bunt in German means multicoloured. That's
yes,
probably
it does.
Where bunting comes from.
Well done. Yeah. Good joke.
So maybe there would be loads of bunting.
Das
in Nazi German.
Only three colours allowed. Okay.
So moving on. They think they're in New York to see Elvis and...
Shit, I should have said only one colour allowed.
So wrong.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, so in the 50s, in New York to see Elvis. Turns out they're in 53, coronation era Britain, which is fantastic. And they have the great scene. This scene is fucking hilarious, in which they basically do the... You boy, what day is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's coronation day.
We get this in almost every episode.
Fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Is the Doctor ignorant every time he lands somewhere?
Well, the first person he encounters, and this is equally valid for classic Who, the first person that the Doctor encounters must assume that he's a complete dipshit.
Yes.
Because he has no idea, but he's completely frank about it.
Yeah.
He's like, where am I? When am I? Who are you? Which country are we in? What's the current socioeconomic climate?
And every single one of them goes, here are the answers to your question, you silly goose.
Yeah.
And then walks off.
Instead of leave me alone, you fucking weirdo.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, that old man quite clearly needs help. Like,
anyway, so I think we need to propel this plot a little bit.
So
they see someone being abducted, which is like the next major plot point. They see someone being abducted by men in black. He even refers to them as men in black, like government agents or whatever. They've thrown a burlap sack over someone's head, tossing that person into a van or a car, and the car speeds off. And now Doc and Rose on said Vespa are speeding after them.
When you say speeding, the thing about a scooter is that it can rev really, really high without going fast.
Having said that, I'm pretty sure Vespas were fairly nippy. And you know, through the streets of London, through the streets of Muswell Hill would have been, you know, I think you'd fancy
faster than a car?
I think you'd fancy chances on a Vespa.
I'm just saying there are a fair few Doctor Who chases conducted at the high end of first gear.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so there's a lot of driving through, and it's quite an exciting chase scene. I thought it was quite cool. The car with the burlap sack abductee disappears into a hole, and a market scene erects in its place, and the trail goes cold.
But it's bullshit. I mean, I'm sorry, it's utter garbage, because the Doctor and Rose, they're completely flummoxed by this. They're like, wait, what?
Flummoxed, are they? They see it happen and they're like, oh, well, we'll never catch them now. It's like, just move the giant screen of cardboard to the left.
Yeah,
and you'd be right.
Maybe, like, assume that something is amiss. You clearly were... they were upset by someone being kidnapped, right? Now, that kidnapped person is behind a fairly easily surmountable obstacle.
Well, I think maybe it's just like carts with apples as his kryptonite. This is the catalyst for the adventure, in which they have to now go do their Nancy Drew nonsense and investigate. Which is kind of becomes Billy Piper like trope, in which they're always off investigating. And
does that differ to, okay, your favorite Doctor is Matt Smith. New Who Doctor is Matt Smith. Would you say that is valid for Matt Smith as well? Because I almost feel like that's a Doctor Who thing, not just a Tennant thing. Do you feel like Smith and...
Amy Pond?
Yeah. Do you feel like Smith and Pond ever... like, did they turn into kind of a detective duo? Or a detective trio with Rory?
I'd say there's a similar dynamic.
Is there a difference between maybe not so much the Doctor-Companion dynamic as the Doctor and Doctor? As in, is this a difference between Tennant and Smith?
I think it's a difference between Tennant and all other Doctors, in which there's...
Tennant is more of a detective.
Well, yes, or the writing thereof makes him more of a detective, as the something weird's going on in suburbia, and we've all got to tease it out. And it's basically that idea that we're all walking amongst streets where crazy shit could be happening, but we just don't know because we don't knock the doors. I think that's the idea. But anyway, so they go to do that. The domestic approach, I think they call it. They go back to
This is Rose's suggestion, in fact.
Why do they pick the family?
That's a super good question. There has been some it's just coincidence.
Just coincidence, not done at all. And they're the coronation inspectors, making sure everything's shipshape.
Royal inspectors.
Which, because I think she sized him up as like, oh, you're a military man, blah blah blah, who would you respect the most? Queen and country.
Yeah, well, that's his assumption, but it's a correct assumption. He flashes the psychic paper, and it turns out he was right. Like, when Conley looked at it, he must have assumed, oh, Royal Inspector.
Yeah.
That's a thing that exists.
Yeah. So they walk in
I like this scene. I think this is a fun scene.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's shittily executed on many, many levels, but I like it.
Right.
Yeah,
why do you like it?
I like it because finally shit is happening. Up until this point, nothing has interested me. I mean,
the opening credits were really fucking dramatic.
Stuff happened. It feels to me, I'm probably going to say this later on as well, but it feels to me as though this episode, something happened in the production halfway through. Because the first half of the episode, it feels like it's crazy made for TV, and it's just, everything feels like you're on the set of some show, and everything's kind of shit. The writing isn't very interesting. The pacing is all over the place. One second they're chasing after someone, the next second they're just completely forgetting about the chase, and they're like in a different mode. There's no smooth transition between anything. And then the second half, it's like, now we have a mission. It's pretty much, I think, pretty much when the Doctor goes off on his own mission. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But at that point, it changes for me. And from then on, I love it.
What's up with the scene? What's cool about
this scene? I like that the Doctor is an arsehole. I like that the Doctor takes advantage of Connolly's naivete and just bosses him around.
Now, see,
because this guy is a wife-beating piece of shit.
This is where I have a problem.
It takes a goddamn Gallifreyan mofo to just put him in his place.
Well, this is why I think it's lazy writing, because basically they pin this guy as basically nothing but an abusive patriarchal. Like,
yeah, but what else are they going to do, man? It's really lazy writing. But what else are they going to do?
I know, it's just lazy. It's nonsense. Because I don't know. There could be that duality that actually he acts how he acts because he's freaked out because his post-war PTSD. I don't know, something that makes him a more fucking three-dimensional.
That sounds more like a two or three episode arc.
Do you think so?
Yeah, that feels like a recurring character rather than someone who's turning up as really not a main character. You want a level of complexity that you, I don't feel like you can lend ancillary characters in a one episode story.
Yeah, so, but they can be better than Punch and fucking Judy, can't they? Can't guarantee.
Yeah. Well, one thing I noticed while watching the episode, and this happens a lot in Doctor Who, when you wish episodes were 5 minutes longer.
Yeah.
So they could give the ancillary characters some more development. But they always spend 5 minutes at the beginning dicking about, going, oh, we are in place B instead of place A. And it's those 5 minutes that could be
that
so
really
key
counts.
And so much more gainfully employed.
Yeah,
100%.
Totally agree with that. And those 5 minutes that are spent in this episode, normally I don't mind those 5 minutes, but in this case, they're spent in a way that just makes the whole thing seem like a panto.
I'll give you that.
You also got a reference to Rose's mum in later season.
That did happen, yes.
While they're dicking about, they're bossing Mr. Connolly around. They're wondering, where is there anyone else in the house? Oh, the grandmother is upstairs, blah, blah. All of a sudden, kablamo.
They know something's wrong. The Doctor, whilst emasculating Mr. Connolly,
yeah,
takes the side and goes, what's going on? So, she won't stop. Like bang or something,
sure.
Something's wrong, and then Mr. Clay's like, "Oi,
you're
fucking
right.
Royal inspectors or whatever."
Oh, and yeah, and they actually go upstairs, don't they? The Doctor sees the grandmother.
Does that happen? Or eventually, do they know?
Yes,
they just, oh yeah,
that
yeah.
Happen in that does. I mean, first of all, Eddie Connolly, he's like, what's this? Strangers can boss me around and make me look stupid, but now they're bringing a level of comfort to my family. How fucking dare they? And then they have the shouting match where one says, I'm talking, and the other's tenant really gets all his spit working.
Oh,
it brings it all up and it starts to bubble, and he shouts louder than the other guy.
Okay, the one thing about, so the
a sign of a good actor,
I feel. I'm talking as a catchphrase to the ancillary character.
Yeah,
actually pretty good. I think that as a like thing does encapsulate the idea,
sure,
of that just forceful patriarchy. Whereas the I'm not listening is not as heroic,
no,
as it fucking sounds. It sounds lame.
Absolutely remember thinking that is a terrible comeback.
No matter how loudly it shouts.
It's fucking bullshit.
Whatever, they go upstairs, they find the grandmother, and the grandmother is Sam's face.
She is without face, yes.
Yeah. She's
also not banging the floor
at all.
For that entire scene, even though she never stops.
Yeah.
And she didn't start until the guy said she never stops.
And also, you would assume her walking around and, like, making noise, a certain amount of brain activity is necessary for that, right? The Doctor scans her with his sonic and finds that there is zero brain activity there.
Well, I want
to
be
even
more
cerebellum brain activity.
I want to be more upset. I just don't know much about neurology.
Okay, whatever. So all of a sudden, kablamo, people burst in, and now kidnap the grandmother in much the same way we saw someone being kidnapped earlier on.
Yeah.
Burlap bag, boom, into a car, and now we get the let's split up and meet back here in 10 minutes trope.
Yeah.
Because the Doctor races after them, Rose stays behind.
Rose stays to do some more snooping.
Yeah.
Because just at the wrong moment, the telly decides to have a moment.
Yeah. And
there's like a little red flash or something, right?
Yeah, so there's a crackle. Rose looks at the back and sees that it's made by electrics and sees that
she sees it, she's standing across the room and she sees it from the front, and the telly's like, hey, over here, I'm a fucking pink thunderstorm.
And then she actually turns it around and sees, like, you're right. No, absolutely.
And then we cut to the Doctor racing through the streets of Muswell Hill.
Yeah.
He's not going to be put off by apple carts or pear carts or any other fruit. Like, he's going for it.
Here's why I think I was right before when I said they were completely flummoxed by the apple carts.
Right.
Because when he shows up, all of a sudden, the same two dudes as in the beginning are there. They put the boxes of whatever in front of
Operation Market Stall.
And he now sees this happening. I mean, he breaks his Vespa just as they are reassembling the obstacle, right? Mm. And his reaction is, oh, very good.
Yeah.
Like, I see what you're doing. Which means that before he didn't see what they were doing and he couldn't put two and two together.
Yeah.
Anyone could figure that out.
But this time he goes and takes a little peek behind, which, you know, really upsets the apple cart.
Yeah. Badoonch.
Oh, yeah. Ha, 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 ha.
Fuck all of you. I've been waiting so long to make that joke. Anyway.
Since 2007.
That's the only reason I'm on this fucking podcast, to make that joke. Anyway.
Well, it was great having you.
Yeah. So the Doctor finds his way after some stealthy recon into was essentially like a pig pen for faceless people.
This is where I encounter my first what the fuck moment of this show.
Your first,
Well, I mean, up until now it's like, oh, you give me a break moments, like one after the other. But this is the first what the fuck moment. When he is actually in the pig pen, sonicking them, all of a sudden they all turn on him and start like pressing him into a corner. Like, they force him into a corner.
Is that what they do?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they start crowding around.
It is absolutely what they do.
Definitely take an interest.
Yeah, and at that point, my assumption was, oh, right, okay, so she's taking their faces and turning them into some sort of zombie army or something. Like, they are clearly bad guys now. Like, they're forced into being henchmen or drones or whatever. But that does not pan out.
No.
The whole, like, the indicator of them actually being controlled and, like, turning into automatons does not pan out.
Now, when you remove all the brain activity from a brainstem, the only impulse left is to spoon.
Oh, you're right. I read that somewhere.
Yeah,
that was in I think that was in Nature magazine.
Surely the music
spoon and quarterly
is different. Much less threatening, much more arousing.
Holy shit! You know what it could be? They have been turned thus by magpie electronics. He sonics them, bright lights, and they congregate around it.
Magpies don't really do bad light. It's shiny.
Shiny. Oh, whatever. Okay, it was a solid theory, guys.
All right, I still think spooning.
Okay, either way, it's a red herring, basically.
Anyway, so
rules meanwhile.
Yeah. Well, no, at that point, he gets sort of caught by detectives.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So
right.
Detective Inspector Device.
Headlights from a
bar. wait, say that again, what?
Detective Inspector Device.
Yes. DI Device.
DI Device. DI Device, first name Lazy. anyway, so here's a weird thing. So the lights that they shine on him from headlights from a car, they're inside in a facility they built.
Yeah.
Presumably,
do they not have
there
lights?
Are other lights.
Well, all the windows are smashed. I assume it's like a bombed out factory from the war.
Still, like, it's a fucking lamp or some shit. Like,
yeah, sure.
Are they doing all of this operation in the dark? Because I understand why they're not making any progress.
Well, you do realise that they're keeping all these people who, I mean, let's be honest about this. They would clearly experiment the shit out of these people, right? Instead, they're just keeping them standing around in a pig pen.
Look, mate.
They're not in a lab somewhere. They're in a corner and no one's guarding them. No one gives a shit about
them. There's a war on.
No. Several years have passed.
I should explain this. There's a war on is a phrase that we all use as a way of, like, you know, rationing and conserving and doing those things. You'd be like, oh, there's a war on, turn that light, or, you know, all that sort of shit.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Well,
which there clearly isn't.
Clearly the police constabulary is still rationing things, including fencing. Like, either way, okay, sorry, carry on.
Yeah.
DI Device.
So DI Device grabs the Doctor and is like, you've got a face! You don't deserve it, you don't belong in that pen. Face first.
And pulls a total 10th planet.
Yeah.
As henceforth, I will be referring to this. He starts off by going, what the shit are you doing here, dude? Like, you are trespassing.
Oh.
And then, click, not transition, just cut to, mid-sentence, he basically goes, I don't know what to do. You need to help me.
He goes 0 to 100. He goes from, you're an intruder to, what, how much is your consultancy fee?
Yeah.
In like the space of a frame. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
DI device, at one point, he's really quite broken up about it. And he's saying, I've been 20 years in the force, and this is beyond anything we've ever seen. 10 years after the Nazis bombed the living shit out of the entire capital, millions of people were hiding in tube stations for their very lives.
That's a good point.
To be fair, that's very different, isn't it? So he hasn't seen anything like that. Like, seeing people bombed isn't exactly the same as seeing faceless people.
No, that's true.
But then he can say, this is not exactly like anything we've ever seen.
That's exactly what he's saying. I'm on the side of DI device on this one.
I don't know, man. I think that's a pretty good point. But okay, regardless, Rose is now with Magpie.
Yeah, they haven't met him. She's gone to investigate.
Yeah, straight to his office.
And he totally does not want her there, right? Like, he...
Well, yeah, actually, he's just like, sorry, miss, you got to come back later, come back. So, which I think we're supposed to get.
I think he wants to spare her.
Well, yeah, I think that's the inference, is that, you know, actually he's a reluctant stooge, villain, henchman, whatever. So she's like, yeah, nah, fuck off. No, I want to buy a telly. Please fuck off.
Yeah.
I desperately want a telly, and she's doing her, well, she thinks he's a clever, you know...
Nancy Drew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nancy Drew.
And then we get the catchphrase of The Wire, which is...
Oh, well, there were several.
That's what the one that they come home with when Rose is in the shop. Hungry.
Is that the opening line? I thought it was something like, are you comfortable or something?
No, that's the opening line. But when Rose is in the shop, it comes on and
hungry.
At which point, this is now my very first note.
Yes.
Up until this point, I have been noteless.
Because it's just getting started.
Because Rose obviously inquires, like, what the shit is that? Magpie goes, it's a TV program, one of those modern TV programs. Fuck you, Magpie, the TV is pretty goddamn modern in itself. There haven't been enough programs for there to be a distinction between old school and modern TV programs.
Yes, fair.
Right. Anyway, I'm not really starting off with a thing, but that's my first note.
Hey,
goddamn.
Starting from
I was so, like, impassioned. You had, like, so little to say up until this point.
Okay, well, I also have a note to say we need our first soundbite of this episode. Because Rose confronts, she obviously understands what's going on. Magpie now goes, I knew I'd be found out at some point. He obviously realizes Rose is going to get her face sucked. Yum. Closes the door, at which point he says, soundbite.
I'm sorry.
Fuck you, Tenant Era. Sorries. Oh, it drives me mental. Like, how many times? So, fuck. Like, I'm sorry. And then adding the fucking perfunctory so doesn't in any way erase your...
I'm so sorry. Fuck you.
Fuck you so much.
Are you implying that all these sorries are responsible for Nick Clegg's speech and subsequent mashup?
Well, the way you said, so sorry.
Oh, I wasn't trying to do a Nick Clegg then.
Oh, that was perfect.
Oh, thank you. I'll remember that for the next party, the next Clegg party.
That's a political commentary that will only play well here. Really hope you guys like that in the States. Anyway.
Don't even Google him, it's not worth it.
So I feel like we've made a lot of attention over this, in which I just hate the idea. Like, the tenant doesn't sound sorry. I mean, he does it with the cats.
He does it all the time.
All the time.
Three gritted teeth. I'm so sorry.
And then I've got to burn your entire, like, planet to the ground. But it's okay because I'm tortured.
Yeah, he does tortured better than he does angry, though, I feel.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
It's very possible that David Tennant is just too nice of a guy. Like, when he does angry, I lose wood. He is not convincing at all.
Yeah, that Magpie bit, I'm so sorry. It's just, did everyone on that writing staff, Gatniss, T. Davis, Moffat, or whatever, get like a briefing? Like, okay, you can write whatever you like. You've kind of got carte blanche. Whatever you want to do, do you want to do 50s Britain or 24th
century?
I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, you're golden. That's the one and only T. Davis rule.
Do you think it was sort of the reverse of the thick of its take on fucks, shits, and ass? Like when it, the thick, you've seen the thick of it, yeah, right? Like when they had finished producing one episode, they would take that to like the rating board and they basically barter for shits and fucks. They're like, we have 30 fucks in this episode. We have 27 shits. How about we take out 3 of these and 2 of those? I feel like maybe it's the reverse
maybe
here.
Maybe
like,
they
you've written
five
something with like actual substance. How about you take out some of that substance and replace it with sorries?
It's really, anyway, it's very upsetting, but we'll keep the sorries, I'm so sorry counter going on the Who Back When site in some way.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I think that's happening. I was just putting a development request.
Oh, God. Yeah. Raise a ticket.
Not be easier as a drinking game.
At
which point, the wire starts sucking Rose's face.
Yum.
Which goes on for a good long time because she's,
it would,
you know, well, it's fairly broad. And
yeah, it is.
And she's also, you know, an important character, so you need to feel the true horror.
Oh, feel the true horror.
Sucked and sucked.
Oh, yes.
All the way across the room.
Oh, wait. Oh, God, so
extending out, you know, the front of her head by several feet.
Oh, head.
Oh, this is so lazy.
And as, you know, it's being sucked right off, she says, good night, children.
Oh,
everywhere.
God damn it. Now I've absolutely lost it.
So, so creepy on many levels. Absolutely meant to freak out all the children watching it. I'm sure it did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very scary.
Well, I think
they did the zooming a bit, though. It got so blurry you couldn't see. You know, on a 4K widescreen TV, kids are used to, you know, pinpoint precision, and they're seeing this weird thing they can't make sense of.
I think that's scarier. Though.
Is this really scary for children?
I think it would scare me.
I'm not so sure it would be scary for children. I don't really know what kids are like, though, so I don't know. But no, I don't feel like this. I feel like this is silly more than scary. Like, this is scary in a Scooby-Doo kind of way.
Oh, I don't know. No, I think certainly that voice and the whole, like, the intimation, you know, they're picking that person as a character to embody was a conscious choice to be scary, scary.
Okay. I would agree.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's just one of those, like, it's settled. The next sort of 30 years worth of British broadcasting in terms of children's stuff was based off that.
Yeah.
So, like, the intimation that, you know, there's a sinister element to children's TV, like, to the people
sure.
that we
it's like, of, it's clown scary.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's clown scary because they're basically the people that were meant to entertain, basically your children's babysitters, your proxy babysitters.
Yeah.
The telly, the clowns, whatever, are actually there to do you fucking harm. But you know, whilst your folks are away and you're in the charge of these people.
Sure, but
that's scary as shit.
Theoretically, I agree with you because it's the kind of horror that you attribute to clowns, dolls, men in ice cream trucks. No, like in general, like it's clowns and dolls basically.
Yeah.
Scarier than that, the scene in The Simpsons where they go, "If you should die before you wake."
Why'd you have to go and do that?
I bet your erection is at absolute zero, right?
No, well, I mean, now that I've come, yeah.
Okay, so back on track. So we missed out the Doctor Who interrogation scene.
Oh, yeah.
We sort of already did.
Why did I say Doctor Who? Completely did,
sorry. This is not Cushing. So the Doctor. Fine, right. So Rose's face is being sucked. Yum. Cut back to Doctor. Nick, take it away.
DI Device is interrogating the Doctor as to, what are you doing here? Why are you in my pig pen? I've been on a force 20 years. All that sort of nonsense. What does he actually get? Oh, no. And then basically some back and forth happens that is completely fucking nonsense.
They check a map, blah, blah, blah.
It's all been happening round here, round Muswell, or some shit. The interesting part is when Rose Pig turns up.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
her face is like a perfectly unblemished slab of meat in this scene.
Okay, that's an...
Oh,
that's an
I am back to a semi, guys.
That's an extra level that I did not think of, but okay. Rose has been picked up. She's been wandering the streets there. They left her in the streets.
And now, this is Tennant doing angry. He doesn't do angry well.
He does angry awfully. But so a couple of things.
He's a great doctor. Let's clarify that as well. Like, it's not that we have anything against him as a...
I don't know. I'm waning. As we're going through these, I'm waning on the Tennant era.
Oh, I really... I like him as a doctor. He's far from being my favorite Doctor, but he still does a good job, and he's a great actor. In other stuff, he's great.
I'm going to have to see him against the Corpus, but so far, with the Hartnell stuff that we've seen from the Eccleston and Smith, and he's losing ground quickly.
Yeah, but he's a very differently written Doctor to Hartnell.
That's what I'm trying to take that into account.
Hartnell was an old, cranky, really, at times really mean son of a bitch. Mm. Whereas Tennant is kind of wibbly wobbly, not quite as wibbly wobbly as the next guy.
I'm trying to take it into account.
Kind of sorry warrior.
I'm trying to take sorry warrior, I love that. The sorry warrior counter. Trying to take into account, I don't know, he's losing out. But this specifically, this scene really fucked me up. So the Doctor has found that the Rose has had her face sucked off and then left in the street to wander around and bump into shit, I guess.
That's kind of fun. I would pay to watch that.
Yeah.
Is that the early version of Pong you were talking about?
And this is obviously one of the, leading on from The Girl in the Fireplace, an obvious, attempt by the writing team to force in the romance.
Oh, not necessarily, I feel.
Do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think it's more like he cares about her because she's the companion. He feels that he has a certain responsibility to her, especially if you look at... JD and I had massive conversations about this in early Eccleston episodes, or reviews, because he promises Jackie Tyler, Rose's mum, I'll keep her safe. Later on, Jackie Tyler reviews this promise, goes like, can you really keep her safe? He goes, no, I can't. Like, I absolutely cannot. And now, once again, he has failed. Like, basically, it's been set up that if he lets Rose wander around without a face, there's going to be a point where he needs to report back to Jackie Tyler and go like, hey, Jackie, I'm really sorry I lost your daughter's face.
The rest of it is cool, though. Butt still works.
Yeah. I tried out the titties. Primo.
The hands they keep randomly grasping as well.
So why is this?
Oh, yeah, okay. Nice firm grip.
You all must stop immediately. Anyway, so for some reason, more than he was, affronted and insulted by the idea that someone was out stealing faces.
Yeah.
Now
it's personal.
Now it's different.
She wasn't even in the house.
Yeah. So now that it is nighttime, he's going to go out and straight to the first step in solving this problem.
No, let's not get there yet. We've not addressed the central premise, which the line is something like, we might need to soundbite this.
Okay.
But it's like...
Now, Detective Inspector Bishop, there is no power on this earth that can stop me. Come on!
Whereas, like, an hour ago, there were loads of things. It's like, if you were just like, hey, sorry we stole all these faces, but none of them were your mate. Yeah, you're cool.
You're right. Oh, that's good.
Oh, that's fine.
You kidnap people in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah. But now there's nothing.
Dude clearly beats his wife when no one's watching.
That's fine. Pretty much. Whatever. In the Doctor's world. But for some reason, as soon as it's his mate, it changes everything.
I don't think that's romance related. I think that's because he has... There's basically a promise that he's intent on keeping, and he knows that he's unable to.
It just seems like a nonsense thing. Like, what? It's basically building in this extra level of drama, which already quite dramatic. People are having their faces stolen. Whatever. Moving on.
Okay, yeah. So it's nighttime, and he heads straight out the door so that he can arrive a couple of blocks away from there at the Conleys the following day around noon.
Yes. Well, no. I'm pretty sure Rose turns up the following day. So he's just, like, left.
Wait, no, because he has a maximum of 3.5 minutes of conversation with DI device. He doesn't spend the night there.
Yeah, you just don't get to see it. I think that he does spend the night there. And
really?
To this point...
Probably spooning Rose.
Did you read this in your journal? Spooning quarterly?
I think this is pre-Rose turning up. I think Rose turns up in the morning, as in she's kicked out by Magpie into the night and then someone picks her up in the morning. And the Doctor has spent the night at the pig pen with DI device and being interrogated or whatever. Which, to me...
In that case, that's poor editing. Because that is not made very clear.
Do you not think so? Well, I mean, we'll look at... I guess maybe we'll look back and listeners, if you want to tweet in what yours was. That transition was. Because, to be honest, it's unclear to me. My reading of it was that he stayed the night they found Rose in the morning wandering around, and that's where he kicked into gear, which begs the question, the contradiction of, so you're happy for your mate to be wandering around this era that they're completely not familiar with on a fucking Todd all the way through the night. She's got nowhere to stay, no money, no friends, because it's the 50s, but you know, later on, you're like, oh, she's in danger now. You literally put her in danger. This is your fucking fault.
Yeah, that's my point. That's my point. When something terrible befalls her, it is his fault.
Well, yeah, no, but he doesn't want that to happen. It's not out of a sense of responsibility. He doesn't hate himself for it. He hates everyone else for it.
Currently. Whatever.
Yeah.
Following day, boom, the Conleys, someone take it away. Drew Meister.
Oh, I wish I had a photographic memory at this point.
Come on, Drooly.
Right.
It's coronation day.
Yes, it's coronation day. Everybody's gathering at the pad around the new telly.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't it nice?
Oh my god, dude, we totally have a voices guy. That's you. That is your job. Okay. You have the best voices. Okay.
Oh, and of course, Auntie Betty, notable for the line,
you just need to beat it out of him.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's really weird.
She basically says, your son might be gay, you should probably beat him a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Mr. Conley goes, yeah, I intend to.
Yeah.
Because he basically tries to show him up, doesn't he, in something. He's like, yeah, you should all go see Nan after this. Which I totally get, like, a lot of, you know, that was a cool little exchange, I thought.
Sure. Is this the point, or was it an earlier point, at which the old man says, you can forget about going to college?
Yeah, no, that was earlier.
I think you're right. I think that is earlier.
So again, it's more that. So actually, yes, there is some layering here in the character along one line, which is he's a prick and he wants to control everything, and that's kind of the patriot. You know, he needs to control his wife into how often she smiles, control the son as to where he's going, what he's learning. The faceless Nan can't even be like.
Does he say in that same segment where he? I mean, this is now rewinding, but in that same segment where he goes. You can forget about college. Does he not also have, like, you're going to be with me.
You're going to work with me, yeah.
Work with me and learn to something. I think we get an indication of...
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, is that it? Isn't there, like, a more specific indication of this is what Mr. Connolly actually does for a living?
There's no indication, but I'm pretty sure he tests soap, which the prerequisite of which you have to get your hands really dirty. I'm really not proud of that one.
No, that was very good.
It didn't come off the way I wanted it to.
I wanted to see when your face would crack there as well.
Fuck, sorry.
No, that was good.
Anyway.
Okay, sorry, Drew. Didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah, everyone's present, including the street dog.
Yes. Apparently,
given pride of place on the centre of the sofa and endless close-up shots.
I actually meant to rewind this after I rewatched it last night. Forgot to. When later on, spoiler alert, there's the face sucking. Did you guys note if the dog gets face sucked?
Yes, it does. That's what it's all leading up to. It's, you know, every kid's face is going to go to the dog every time it's on the screen.
Oh.
And then it is sat right in the middle and... Yes.
So, Tommy answers the door to the doctor, and the doctor says, you know, you need to tell me what's going on right
now. In his angry voice.
He's actually angry, he needs answers, Tommy's going to give him answers, Mr. Connolly turns up, it's like, nah, shut up.
Causes a massive scene.
Yeah.
During which, I mean, this scene takes a good, I would say 2 minutes, right, to play out. The doctor is in a bit of a hurry.
Yeah.
I feel like the maturity of Tommy, or like him becoming a man, shouldn't be his top priority at this point. He shouldn't spend 2 minutes just watching this shitstorm unfurl before his eyes. Yeah. He should go, guys, have this conversation later. Tommy, tell me what happens.
Yeah, his ability to prioritize is like, oh, you guys have a little domestic. You finish up because, you know.
He pulls a General Cutler.
He does. Oh my god.
Yeah, from the 10th Planet. Last classic we reviewed. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that's the next episode to drop. Weirdly, the last episode that dropped for you.
Ooh. Wow.
Paradox alert.
All right. I'm sorry.
But it's important that we learn the worst thing about fascism is that it entails the rights of little twerps to do whatever they want. Little twerps like me, Dad. You died for me to basically turn upside down the world you fought for.
fascism in a nutshell.
Yeah, they did really get fascism right, and or the railing against it. But whatever.
Yeah, do you know what my favorite part of this scene is, though? It's that after Mr. Connolly has been emasculated and Tommy has turned into a man, the mum turns up, right? Mm. And actually, she's the one who emasculates the husband. Mm. But she then tells her son, go away with these two strange adult males. Do something. Don't tell me when you're coming back. Don't tell me where you're going. Just go.
Well, no. Okay, so moving on. Going back to
that's
what?
Weird, man. Yeah, that's bad mothering.
Going back
she
to
is
it.
A bad mother.
I think that's just a BBC trope that actually there is no stranger danger. Go and if a guy in a trench coat, asks you to investigate like a crime scene with him, you go.
I feel like she should ask them to show some ID.
No. That's not how the BBC goes. No one. Has ulterior motives beyond capers and jest and like, you know,
sure.
Treasure chest.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
shit.
Fine.
Yeah,
and the worst thing to fear is programming itself. Get outside, children, and find yourself a stranger. Yeah.
They really know how to sell themselves.
They really do.
Tommy now leaves with Doc and DI Device, and they go straight to Magpie.
Magpie Electricals, yeah.
Confront him.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. Doc finds a device. Licks it, blah blah blah. It's a portable TV.
It looks like a portable TV, which we're all supposed to laugh at because we know portable TVs were then subsequently invented. Ha ha! Aren't the past dickheads? It's essentially.
Magpie arrives. The Wire, the lady in the TV, she turns up as well, and we get a second iteration of the same joke that DI Device makes about the portable TV when all of a sudden she turns color. And everyone's like, holy fuck, she's alive. Holy shit, she's an alien. And DI Device just goes, holy shit, color TV.
He's like, ha ha ha, aren't the past dickheads.
And I've seen this tree before.
While the doctor is saying, well, this technology is far beyond the human capacity and for invention. And in the next breath, oh, it's so simple. Aren't the past dickheads.
Like, oh, the past, so quaint.
Yeah, that's absolutely... Oh, because actually, one of the easiest writing devices is to make your audience feel clever. Feel cleverer than the people... Dramatic irony, and it's that, oh, don't you know a lot of stuff that these idiot people don't?
Because someone else invented a colour television for you.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't fucking invent it. You've just seen it, all right? So you can't pass judgment on stupid DI device because you don't know how it fucking works either.
Yeah.
Unless you are some sort of, like, researcher in the field. We've all got gaps in our knowledge. It's not actually that clever to take the mick out of people that don't have
sure.
But whatever. Moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got to this point where...
we get a face stockage.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the wire... Yeah. We get the wire has identified the doctor.
It's a three-way face stockage.
Well, it's one of those things, actually, again, tenant error doctor into is that people call him clever a lot.
He also calls himself clever a lot.
Yeah. But actually, I mean, yeah, sometimes it's borne out in his actions and what he does.
Sure.
But I think that they build up his reputation of cleverness, mostly by people just calling
him. Yeah, but, well, you know what? No, I disagree.
Go.
Because the fact, in this episode, for example, and take it from someone who only likes 50% of it, in this episode, he's the only person who can solve the problem, not because he's that good at anything, besides having been informed of it beforehand. He knows the context in a way that 1953's North London does not. But arguably, anyone who knows that context, anyone who comes from his time or his whatever, blah, blah, seen what he's seen, would be able to solve this problem as well. It's not that he has
faculty for logical thinking.
It's just he knows, oh, this is energy. I now need to put an antenna together. That's it.
But the wire notices something in him that he's so clever, I'm going to have lashings of you. The idea is
that's
that
true.
He's got this crazy wealth of knowledge, which absolutely
brain,
awesome.
Yeah,
obviously he exists.
I think maybe that could... Okay, I don't know, but you could also argue that's just a matter of, let's say, memories. He's been alive so much longer than everyone else, so to eat someone's mind, i.e. like intellect or their memories, is like, oh, I'm eating 30 years worth of life. Whereas in him, it's like there's 900 years worth of life to eat here.
Yeah, we get to see that more in New Who as that goes, and that occurs a couple of times.
Yeah.
Where people, yeah. But I don't. Anyway. moving on.
Whatever.
To the point that, so they're stuck in face. So Tommy, DI device, and the doctor ingested. That gets broken because...
Because the doctor wriggles his sonic screwdriver up towards the beam, and she says,
"You can't, you can't see this podcast, lad. But that's nipple height."
The druid is genuinely tweaking himself.
Tweaking his nipples.
It's pretty sensual.
Without photographic evidence, this is just, you know.
Sure. Do it again. What is he doing?
Yeah, okay, Son's tweaking. Yeah. The doctor is inching his sonic screwdriver up towards the beam, presumably to break it off in some way, and the wire is sufficiently freaked out to withdraw.
To even say it.
Yes, yes. He's armed! And then she goes back into the telly, and poor old DI device is the only guy who has no further plot function to fulfill, and so he's left on the floor faceless while the doctor
and twitching and opening and closing his hand.
Cranking his hand.
Why does the wire go, "He's armed, retract, or whatever it is, like,
withdraw.
Why? This is exposition mode again. This is like basically a Dalek saying anything a Dalek ever says. You wouldn't do this. You would just maybe stop doing what you're doing. You wouldn't tell yourself, "He's armed, withdraw."
Well, yeah, but without that, the beam just goes back into the telly, and, like, no, to make the beam go back into the telly, the sonic screwdriver has to disrupt the beam, and then you've got people bitching about, "Oh, well, we'll just use the sonic screwdriver," and that's the end of it.
Okay, I suppose.
But the analogy is, if you're in a fight...
That's a good point, actually, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're in a fight, you don't say to yourself, "Dodge, punch." You just back, don't you? Like, or you move to a side where you don't say it. That gets stupid.
You guys would write terrible television.
I know, we'd write awesome and very, very subtle television.
So, Doc and Tommy, they are presumably knocked out at this
point.
They're
knocked out, and Magpie grabs the portable TV.
Yeah, she transfers into the portable.
Yeah.
And the wireless wire?
Yes. Oh, nice.
And they head off.
In another beautiful van.
I knew you were going to have a car on about this van.
Such a good van. I don't know. I think it's...
Why do you have a car? You should clearly have a van.
I should clearly have... Everyone should have a van if you're going to do Dastardly News. Like, it's a... It was beautiful. The one thing I do actually want to say, it's a weird, like, cinematography thing, is that there's a wicked camera angle in the van. It's like dashboard mounted, and it's it's really cool and action packed, and makes the whole thing very cool.
Oh, nice! I didn't consider
that. Yeah, it's very good. Anyway,
Screenshot on whobackwhen.com.
Yes. So Magpie heads off in his awesome van,
heading
for a transmitter.
Yeah. Doctor and Tommy now regain consciousness. Doctor puts together a plan. He's going to assemble some sort of Deus Ex Machina device that will solve everything.
Absolutely.
And so gathers bits and bobs from, I think, partly Magpie's shop.
Yeah.
And also the TARDIS. At which point, we need a soundbite.
It's never too late. As a wise person once said. Kylie, I think...
Something like, a Kylie look.
Yeah, who is a future companion of the Doctor's, in fact. Kylie Minogue turns up in a Christmas bonus episode with Tennant.
Did not think of that.
It's the one with the Space Titanic.
Kylie. Yeah. I love
the weird angel robots.
You don't need to tell me, I'm full. Love the Kylie. Anyway, so the David Tennant figures out why they're where they are, which is Muswell Hill, which is next to...
Ali Pally.
Yeah, Ali Pally, which for our non-British and non-Londonite listeners is possibly the most famous TV transmitter in all of London.
And also a pretty cool place, Alexandra Palace.
A wicked bat.
Google image search Alexandra Palace. I guarantee you'll find some cool pictures.
Giant hill where you go to see gigs every so often, and it's so fucking hard to get to.
I used to live about 10 minutes walk from there.
So hard to get
to. No tube station anywhere near it.
Oh, my days.
So I retract my former 10-minute statement and change that to 20.
But it's a cool place still.
Yeah,
and a very iconic piece of London.
It is where the BBC first began transmitting from, back in the days when only London got any signal.
Yeah. So
the good old days.
You can see Ali Pally in the distance, and the Doctor and Boy Wonder self.
Boom.
Yeah.
Well, they chase him to Ali Pally. Magpie is already climbing the actual antenna, right? And we get, I think, a kind of a funny scene, in fact, where the Doctor flashes the psychic paper to a guard, and it actually... No, I have a question for you, because I think once again we have... I didn't even consider this until now. Holy shit. Right. My mind is literally being blown right now.
Yeah.
I think this is another case of psychic paper working differently just to fulfill this plot point. Yeah. So he flashes the psychic paper to the guard. The guard goes, oh, sorry, sir, you shouldn't be going there. It's very dangerous, blah, blah, you might die. Shh. Then Tennant turns the psychic paper, looks at it himself, and he now is able to read off the psychic paper what the other person saw in it. Mm. I don't feel like this is how psychic paper is meant to work. It's basically like everyone sees in it what they themselves project.
What they want to see, yeah.
Yeah. But he's able to look at it and go, really, I'm the king of Belgium?
I'm thinking back to the end of the world, the Eccleston.
Yeah.
Where, like, psychic paper, was that the first?
Yeah. Question? This is also an episode where JD and I have this exact conversation because it doesn't really pan out.
Mm. That sounds fair to say that, but then I feel like that later on psychic paper works like the doctor can read it or read minds essentially.
I think there are three different ways. Maybe we should have a bonus episode about psychic paper, but like I feel like there are three different ways it works. Either you show it to someone, they see on the paper what they want to see.
Yes,
they project the truth.
That's how I think of it.
In End of the World, Captain Jack holds up psychic paper, and Rose sees on it what he projects onto the paper.
Bing bong, correction from Future Ponkin here. I apologize wholeheartedly for my brain. I did not mean to say End of the World. What I meant to... Oh, wait, you know what? Let's turn this into a game. Do you know what I meant to say? Okay, wait, think of it. Here we go. Let's say it with me. Sorry, I've had way too much coffee. Say it with me anyway, okay? 3, 2, 1. Did you say it? I totally made you say it, didn't I? What I really meant to say was, the empty child. Is that what you said as well? No way! That's crazy! Up top. Fist bump. Nice one. Okay, let's get back to the show.
But he's not able to see on it what it says. He just flashes some paper and figures this is a cool ID. She then reads off it, oh, you're hot and single and blah blah and you want to bone me. And now Tennant flashes paper at someone, they project something onto that, he looks at it, he can read it. Oh shit, and we got the fourth one where, what's his face? The face of Bo?
Yeah.
What's his face? Where the face of Bo projects a message onto the doctor's paper in New Earth.
Yeah, SMS.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Soggy Paper works however it wants to, however it suits the plot. Anyway, sorry, rant over.
Yeah. Also, the thing is like, oh, you're the king of Belgium. To be able to project that onto the paper, I'll probably know who the King of Belgium is or what he looks like. And he doesn't look like you.
No, that's true. But is that the first assumption? You see someone in a trench coat run towards Ali Pali. Oh, that must be the King of Belgium.
Well, the psychic paper projects what you want to see.
Yeah.
So what you want to see is the King of Belgium.
This guy might have like a very specific fetish. Well, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. If he does have a specific fetish, he knows what the fuck the King of Belgium looks like.
Yeah, nothing like David Tennant in a trench coat, I'm sure.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look up 50s era King of Belgium.
Yeah.
Since television was so young and new, presumably we didn't, you know, devote that much television time to monarchs of the world.
That's true. This security guard in Ali Pali has probably only seen, like, glorious oil paintings.
Exactly. Anyhow, so we're...
Because that's how it goes. Like, it goes, like, rudimentary cave drawings, oil paintings, television. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's not just
those
me. I'm pretty
only
sure that's
three
it.
Types of
it. anyway, so, sorry, yeah, carry on.
We're at Ali Pali now, scaling the transmitter, the mast, to thwart the wire. Okay. And to be honest, long story short, it's thwarted. I know there's probably other things to say,
no,
but that's fucking basic.
No, that is exactly it. Unless you want to add something, Druid.
Well, not just the wire's weird selectivity. In one slap, she swipes.
That's true.
Magpie. Well, no, she vaporized.
She vaporized completely.
Exactly.
Yes. Why doesn't she do that to the doctor?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it makes no sense whatsoever. Another thing that pisses me off about this, I remember this. Why is it not in my notes? What the hell, man? Why is there a three-pronged connector on Ali Pali at the top? Because if he had used jumper cables, it would have made sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I'm saying.
In fact,
fuck that shit. She was able to wirelessly transmit herself from his TV into the portable TV.
Why not make the extra few feet?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, she transported herself across
space.
Of space.
Yeah. Why does she need a balding, corpulent man
to hold a Game Boy?
To ferry a Game Boy in an awesome van across London.
An awesome van.
It makes no sense. Okay, whatever. Yeah, but you're right. Thwarted. Problem solved. Now we jump into the end scene.
Everybody gets back their faces.
Oh, wait.
The Doctor just reverses everything.
Yeah, everyone gets back their faces. We have now had, like, a montage of basically all of North London getting their face sucked off, right? This is traumatizing. They are fully aware of what's happening. It's painful. They're scared as shit. But they are still watching the telly when they get their faces back. No one stops and goes, guys, we seriously need to take an axe to this machine because clearly it is up to no good. Did you just notice how we all got our faces nearly sucked off?
I'm sorry, did you want some sort of Nolan-esque PTSD.
Touche, sir. No, but seriously, I feel like they absolutely, everyone should turn off the TV and the alien kind of partly won because no one watched the coronation on TV because everyone went, fuck, let's not watch this.
Yeah, although the BBC would be doing itself a disservice.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, whatever. If by regaining their faces they lost their memory of it, that would make sense to me.
Well, like, their brains were sort of suspended in midair, I suppose, being washed around.
I don't know. I think we even get a little, like, weird royalist comment from Mrs. Conley, who's like, oh, isn't that nice? That just clears everything right up. Watching that lovely coronation, everything's right as rain again.
Big hat.
We all nearly died. Yeah.
It's hilarious.
All's well that ends well.
Okay.
So the epilogue is that is basically the resolution, the family, the dad's out on his ear, and Rose says, you should go talk to your dad. Talk to your dad. I've got daddy issues. You should have daddy issues.
Yeah, it's definitely a callback to Father's Day and, I guess in a weird way, possibly also to Rise of the Cybermen or the Age of Steel, but Father's Day predominantly, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
And that's pretty much it.
That's pretty much, let's call it.
Reviews.
Right, okay, I'm going to kick it off.
We're going to do Nick, Drew Meister, and me.
Right, I'm going to kick it off because actually I had these really fond memories of The Idiot's Lantern. I have no idea fucking why. It was on a second watch or a third watch or whatever we are at this point. I was mostly just angry.
In fact,
I don't know why.
I'm pretty sure, sorry to cut you off there, I'm pretty sure that in the last review, the classic,
I was like, oh, such an awesome
one. We were both like, oh my god, this is going to be the best ever.
And then I watched it back, and it's really, like, so the girl in the fireplace, Madame de Pompadour, really stands up. I watched it back, and it was absolutely as good as I remember it being.
Yeah.
This was the opposite, is that I remember it being this sumptuous 50s romp of all the fun things and these iconoclasms and these, like, quite an interesting story. But no, it was none of those things. It looked like it. It's kind of like a cardboard painting, but there's nothing behind it. Like,
it's a Potemkin wall.
Absolutely. And there's no depth. From what I could understand, they fit so many elements, there's no depth. The Doctor annoys me because he was just angry, but for a set of priorities that didn't really make any damn sense.
Sure.
I
feel like they make sense personally, but yeah, okay, carry on.
Really? Did they make sense?
Dude, we had this conversation, ladies and gentlemen, rewind 30 minutes.
Alright, so he had the priorities the wrong damn order.
Yeah. General
Cutler. Yeah, he General Cutler the shit out of this. I don't know, I just thought it was generally easy. I cut it down to a number.
Yeah.
1.8.
Well, this being my first one, I don't want to go too strongly either way.
Oh, nice.
I'm also getting to grips with, I watched it originally when it first came on, and I similarly enjoyed it, and I was looking forward to jumping into the Who Back Weniverse at this point with some knowledge.
Had you seen it since then? Sorry.
I hadn't seen it since then.
Okay.
And I don't know if I'm older and more depressive or just less tolerant, or whether it's this experience of looking at it under the microscope for our podcast that really pushes you beyond the superficial level of enjoyment of a fairly flimsy period piece into, wow, none of this makes a shit of sense. I can't say where along that continuum this episode, you know, objectively, factually sits. So I am going to give it a 2.5.
Ooh. Nice. Just to speak to this a little bit more, just to add, is that I think maybe in 2007, we were just sort of swept up. There are some really promising elements to this.
And we're still close to the actual revival of
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just so fucking happy it's back. And so happy that there's some relatively interesting things to happen, a compelling leading man and a companion, that I think we just got blinded.
It's possible.
That's very possible.
2 year honeymoon period.
Pumpkin, lead us in with your review.
Okay, so what was it? 1.8, 2.5? 2.5. All right.
Because I can go up or down from there.
Two awesome minis, and I don't know what I can add to it because I kind of want to just echo everything you're saying. I too remember loving this back in the day, and or possibly I remembering that I loved this.
Meta.
Because I did not remember the full plot of this. In fact, I think you, Nick, had to remind me what this episode was about before I rewatched it the other night. I feel like the first half of this episode is absolute garbage in terms of just production or direction, maybe. It doesn't seem believable. The pacing is all shit. The production value is really nice, but just it feels like a set as opposed to a piece of London, which is weird because it was actually shot in goddamn North London. Like, it's not a set. Regardless, it feels like they had tons of ideas for this plot and then didn't follow through.
Doesn't it feel like a two-parter that wasn't ever realised?
Very possibly. I feel like there's an element of... it's funny that you said... did you say this before? The empty child? I feel like that came up in conversation earlier. There's an element...
I came up with the idea that the Doctor Who writers like this period of history.
Yeah, okay, no, that's very true. And I feel like maybe they wanted to call back to The Empty Child, which was this hugely successful episode, right? Or like part of a hugely successful double feature, in that they had the element in the pig pen where they all turn to zombies or whatever.
Yeah, see that.
And I feel like that was an idea that the writers had at one point. Not only do you lose your face, and actually we failed to mention this, super creepy, we see faces on TV sets. Very creepy. Poorly executed, but still a creepy idea. All these people, their personalities lost in some weird void, or in the ether, as it were. But it feels like they had the idea of, not only does that happen, your body is also taken over and you're now turned into some sort of weird drone, just like the gas mask zombies in The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances. But it wasn't followed through. Like, they had that one scene in the pig pen and then nothing else. Fuck that nonsense! That totally takes this episode apart from me. I don't like that at all. We get the 10th planetism of DI device going, who the shit are you? How dare you be here? How can you help me, by the way?
Also, would you like to be a detective?
I have a spare badge.
I have a sidekick to cast to one side. Never be seen again.
Oh, that's right. He had a sidekick. We didn't mention this. He had a sidekick whom we never see again.
Constable Sidekick. Where are you?
What about those two guys who manned the apple crates? They could have surely have been of some use. They did nothing. Those guys should clearly be fired. Now, like, my point is, about half of this story is nonsense. The second half, up until the point when they... Basically, when they start chasing after Magpie when he's on his way to Ali Pali, they're like a solid 15 minutes of pure gold. But that's 15 minutes out of a 47-minute episode or something that are actually enjoyable and well-written and whatever. Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Like bits, don't like other bits. Roses has a nice dress. Here, I give this a... I'm going to give this a 1.8 as well.
Yeah.
Blammo, fist bump. Drewmeister... Your 2.5 are evidence of your big heart.
Which you should get looked at.
Which I feel kind of brings this episode to a close. Ladies and gentlemen, you should most definitely follow... Are you on Twitter?
No, sorry.
You should, well, you know what? You should most
You should just follow him around.
Exactly. Yeah. If ever you were to decide to join Twitter...
Yes.
Let people know.
Okay.
It's part of it.
Present a target.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in giving the Drewmeister, the Drewhammer, the Druid a massive hand and a hug and a high five and tell him welcome to Who Back When.
Thank you for inviting me along.
And Drewmeister is not on Twitter, but you know who is. Oh, you don't? Well, let me enlighten you.
He's not on Twitter. He is Twitter.
He's Mr. Twitter himself. Yeah. You can find him at Twitter. No. Follow Nickelele. He is at Nickelele, in fact. Yeah. That's like ukulele, but with Nick.
Yeah.
Kablamatron.
Without a C.
No, without... Yeah, this is N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E. Fuck. Am I going to write that? I don't know. Get happy.
Yeah.
In a reciprocal nature, in no way forced.
Oh, it's just this every time.
This is different. This is different. Sometimes I just feel like saying this, and it doesn't always make it into the final cut, and it's sometimes at the beginning, middle, and end. Here we are at the end.
A lot of that won't make it into the final cut.
Absolutely. Feel free to follow Ponkin at Ponkin.
Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Join us in future episodes of Who Back When. If you're thinking in terms of classic Who, check this out. We're going to do a William Hartnell retrospective, and then we're jumping into Troughton Land with the power of the Daleks. That's God damn it.
Such an exciting fucking title.
It's awesome, by the way. I have seen / listened to it. It's pretty badass.
Bing bong, Future Ponkin here again. For some reason, I honestly do not know why, but for some reason, we actually just lost the end of the recording. Like, my computer stopped recording mid-outro. Really, really weird. I have no idea why. So here I am, all by my lonesome, and I'm going to tie this up. First, another correction, though. We are going to wait with the Hartnell retrospective until JD is back. It's just going to be another few weeks. So we're going to carry on straight into Troughton Land. And then somewhere sometime in a few weeks' time, then we'll do the Hartnell retrospective. We're just going to have to jump back. You're just gonna have to deal with it. But that's not so bad. That's really not so bad. You know why? Because the next New Who episode that we're reviewing is The Impossible Planet. That's right. It's part one of the double feature consisting of The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit. Yeah. We are either going to love or hate that one. Yeah. You should totally check that out. If your palate is rather in tune with Audio Who, well, you know what? Just hang in there, because when JD's back, we're also going to review the next Eighth Doctor Adventure audiobook. The next one in line, which one is it? It's Wirren Dawn. Spoiler alert, still don't like it. Anyway, that's enough for now. Thank you so much for listening to this, ladies and gentlemen. You are a lovely bunch of people. Catch us in the next one. Check us out on Twitter, at WhoBackWhen. Subscribe to us and rate and review us on iTunes. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Why am I saying this? It's all in the outro. It's all pre-recorded. Am I pre-recorded? Was my life scripted? I don't know. Was yours? If so, write to us. info@whobackwhen. I want to know, because I care. Thanks for listening. Cha-chow. Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?